Welcome to Worst Year Ever, a production of iHeartRadio.
Welcome to the worst year ever. We'll get through it together or not. Everything is so dumb, 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 dumb.
Ooh, baby, baby, welcome back to the worst year ever.
Hootie, hootie, hoo!
Oh, ow.
That's my new catchphrase.
Hootie, 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 yeah. Hoo. And yours
yeah.
is yeah?
Yeah.
And mine's, ooh, baby. Guys.
No. No.
That's my celebration noise.
I am just not acknowledging it. What are you celebrating?
The great day and night.
That we've all had.
I am,
yesterday and today.
I am celebrating the fact that I haven't checked in on any of the Iowa caucus results, but I am celebrating my assumption of the fact that everything went perfectly. The DNC really nailed, as did the Iowa Democratic Party, what needed to happen.
Yeah.
And everybody's happy with the results. Now, I'm going to take a single sip of coffee and search Twitter. What?
That was a fun bit.
Well, leading into it, let's just say this tweet from the Democratic Party.
Amazing.
For 3 years, we've been preparing for the process that officially kicks off tonight in Iowa,
yep.
the Democratic presidential primary.
Beautiful. And I hope you all have gathered by now that today we are going to talk about the unmitigated disaster that was yeah. the Iowa caucus, the very first voting event of 2020. The event that sets the tone for the whole election ended in confusion, disorganization, fears of tampering, and as of yet, still no official winner. Mm. Although at the time of this recording, it does look like Pete won.
No, it doesn't.
And Bernie won the popular vote. No, it doesn't. It's only at 62% reporting right now.
Many of the counties that you know, have not been reported
I know, but the narrative but, that we're being yeah. told at this
now,
point.
My friends, my dear friends, Katie, I love you and
you.
Respect you. And I think you make a good point that that this is part of what sets the trend for the election. But I do think that was a slightly incomplete statement because I think two things have set the trend for the 2020 election. One of them is that the right wing in this country was able to organize north of 22,000 heavily armed people to march in a state capitol in favor of a political belief that they hold. And at the same time, the Democratic Party was unable to launch an app with millions of dollars of investments behind it to track the votes of about 100,000 people.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, that's an
those
very
two
important.
Things are important.
They're both important. Look,
I love living in metaphors.
Last night, there was a lot of speculation running around, some of which we partook in. Most likely what happened last night was your run-of-the-mill establishment incompetence.
Gross incompetence.
Gross incompetency.
Unbelievable. Almost unprecedented
yeah,
incompetence.
It's pretty wild. And we're going to dig into all,
so
of,
good.
All of that. Well, it's hard is that no matter who wins at this point,
it's an aliens versus predator situation.
It's
yeah.
just everything's tainted now.
Well, yeah, like, they know what they're doing.
It's truly remarkable. And so this isn't quite the conversation we expected to have today. We were preparing to have a more normal conversation, so we're kind of yeah. putting it all together at the last minute. But it'll be fun. We'll
yeah,
have fun.
We were like, well, we'll talk about like what caucuses are. We'll talk yeah. about the results a little bit. It'll probably be pretty boring, but that'll be that.
Yeah, and we're still going to talk about caucuses a bit, but man.
But then what happened?
Hopefully it's not boring. Before we get into what happened last night, I do think that we should discuss what caucuses are, how they work, or how they should work.
Yes.
Whether or not,
whether or
they,
not
work,
they work,
before we talk about all that. Like I said, Iowa is the first caucus of the election cycle, and a lot of people are asking why. It's a great question.
Mm-hmm.
Why indeed? The answer is because I guess they have a state law mandating that they be the first caucus of the election cycle, and somehow their state law is something we all honor. I don't know.
Yeah.
Interesting quick note about that being a state law. Another law in Iowa, it's the only state with a lifetime voting ban for anyone ever convicted of a felony.
Cool. That's
awesome.
So voting issues in Iowa.
Pretty Iowa-ish.
think about people I don't want to ever be able to vote. I think someone who at one point had an ounce of marijuana in their car on the wrong day.
I also, I'm glad, because once you do a thing, that there's no going back, and there's no...
No going back.
Yeah, yeah.
No going back,
no
guys.
No reformative...
You can't ever change. That goes. That's all part of the conversation. Iowa is small, and it is predominantly white. It's not a reflection...
Iowa?
Iowa, I know. Can
Iowa,
you believe
America?
It? It's not really a reflection of the general America... at large, the voting demographic. And historically, it has had a very outsized influence on the election, especially, since 2000, everybody that's won the Democratic Iowa caucus has gone on to get the actual nomination.
That's true.
Now, how many of those people have won the presidency?
Oh.
Is it two?
One.
Oh, one. Excellent.
Al Gore, then Kerry, Obama, and Clinton.
Yep. So, you know, it's just
interesting to note that the one that won was the most progressive
it is interesting.
Candidate of the of that era.
But, you know, it's a big question. Why does it have this? It has the influence because it's the first one. And so people leave Iowa and they have a lot of momentum. Mm-hmm. And people who are in second place also usually pick up a lot of momentum and get a big bump in donors.
Yeah, it's largely like narrative based. Like present this like, oh, we're gonna do it, and then it leads into the next ones.
But this time, seeing as it's already mired in controversy, we're not really sure. We can't predict at this point how this win for whomever it is will affect them going forward. But anyway,
I want to say real quick, just because I think this bit of research I did fits here. I was kind of curious, just sort of like in the question that you started with, Katie, is like, why Iowa? Why do we let them do this? And obviously they have a state law, so they're going to do whatever it takes to be the first. I was kind of curious as to whether or not there was like a financial incentive for this too. Like if it's like a huge industry in the state.
I'm sure it is, isn't it?
And well, not quite. I found a study that was some college, I think, some college in Iowa did that. And it was back in 2007. So 2008, like, so, it may be a little bit out of date, but they found that Iowa received just about 4.4% of all campaign spending by measured candidates, and which is like more or less in line with New Hampshire. Like they don't get that much more money than New Hampshire. They do make, you know, like $7 million in labor for the caucuses and like a couple hundred jobs. It's not an insignificant amount of money or an insignificant amount of jobs, but Iowa's state GDP is $130 billion, or at least it was in 2007. So, like, you know, even though, like, the value of the caucuses has increased a bit, you're talking about, like, 0.01% of the state's annual domestic product when you divide it by the fact that it's every four years. So it's not a huge economic gain for the state. The study does notice that, quote, the Iowa caucuses do provide exposure that the state, its businesses, and its boosters would find very expensive to obtain otherwise for free. And for a time, the word Iowa is used continuously in national and international mass media, and that continuous and often sensational coverage of the political campaign and the communities of Iowa has to be, as the ad says, priceless. That said, it's not a huge deal. Like, if you're looking for why Iowa is so fucking hellbent to host the caucus, it's got to be more than money, because there's just not a
I think
that
it's
much.
Also
it's not that big a factor.
Tradition. It's the fact that we've done this and we will do it. There's a pride in it, I guess. I do think that the tourism industry, or around the time of the election, you know, you see a spike in hotels being booked and all that stuff.
It definitely matters for some people, for sure.
But anyway,
interesting about the coverage leading up to it also, because it is sort of presented as like this big, big thing. The coverage leading up to this caucus, significantly lower than it usually is. Mm-hmm. It's like, I think, 10 minutes of time spent talking about the Iowa caucus compared to last year or last election's 86 minutes.
Interesting.
Just interesting how they downplay it as certain things are positioned.
Well, maybe that's good. I don't know. Anyway, here's a very basic rundown of the mechanics of the caucus. Thank you, New York Times, for this little explainer.
For that specifically.
And that's as far as my thank you extends. Thank
there
you very
go.
Much.
There it is.
Because I don't know about you guys, but it's confusing even knowing the basics of it. You're like, what is happening right now? Well, especially last night. Anyway, okay. Number one, people go to a physical designated location like a gym or a library. 2, there are representatives of each candidate in the location. 3, everyone walks up to that candidate area to represent their support. Just like little human votes bouncing around a gym.
Go ahead. Finish, Katie. Well, it one of the things that's important about this is that it takes multiple hours to be a part of this, which is part of why
the turnout
is so low. Yeah.
We'll get into that stuff.
Yeah. I'll let you finish.
4, everyone is counted. If one of the groups represents at least 15% of the people, they are considered viable. And then there's 2. People in the non-viable groups can now choose to do several things. They can either join another group, walk around and convince people to join their group, or move on to an uncommitted group. The tally is once again counted, and based on the numbers, each candidate is awarded delegates based on how many supporters they have. Iowa has 41 pledged delegates. Those delegates will then go to the DNC and show support for the candidate they were assigned to. All right, it's a little convoluted, but basically, if your candidate isn't viable, then you go move on to your second choice candidate, and there's a lot of opportunity for people to interact and mingle and have.
So, in short, everything's so dumb.
Some didn't this year.
Get into all of that. Don't worry. So, what was different about last night? You guys might have heard that there were some changes made this year. Some of the campaigns pushed for key changes to be made to this caucus system, the biggest change being that there will now be a popular vote winner as well as an official winner, something that's never been done before. That's been thrown around a lot as one of the reasons reporting last night was so messed up, but I think that's ridiculous.
I've seen a lot of that, that claim of they changed the rules for you, and it's your fault actually that it's happening. And that's just
not true.
It's not what happened.
It's
now,
not.
You've described the system to me, Katie.
Yes.
And one thing I just want to ask for clarification on, there's no chance that this system that is still a critical part of determining who will run the country and control a nuclear arsenal, this system was not by chance developed by people who drank mercury when they got the flu, right?
Oh, I mean, I can't speak to that specifically, but it very well could have been.
Sounds like
is that what they did back then?
Sounds like a leading question there, Robert.
Sounds like a leading. Would I be stupid if I said no?
It's just such a bad idea.
It's such a bad idea. So this is from USA Today. For decades, the winner of Iowa's caucuses has been decided by a complicated system of state delegate equivalents, which operates kind of like the Electoral College. Unlike in the November presidential vote, though, Iowa's tally of popular support was never released. But on Monday night, the Iowa Democratic Party will publish the 2 raw vote totals and the delegates' numbers from caucus night. I probably didn't need to read that quote.
No, I mean,
exactly. It's just what I explained. Yeah. But this goes on to talk a little bit more about how this changes everything, but this new rule. But since people look to this as a way to boosts one campaign, and you're like, okay, he seems like the clear front runner. Now we've got a whole different set of data to look at, and so it's totally different ballgame this year.
Because we've talked about, like, it's a narrative-based thing mostly.
Yeah.
It, like, creates this perception of how a candidate's doing, and, like, we've got momentum. Okay, but who voted, like, that first round, who got the most support in the first round?
Right.
That's important to know. Who got the most votes? That's important to know. Like, how did people switch over?
Yeah.
Like, that's all important information.
There's also this. Oh, I'm sorry, Cody.
Oh, it's fine.
Were you?
I was just gonna say that that's important information to know, and that having that rule change would not make what happened last
Absolutely
night happen.
Not.
It had nothing to do with it.
Transparent
votes and records does not equal the disaster that was
last
night.
That's completely different situation. Another kind of weird new rule that not everybody knows about, I don't think, is if your first pick ends up being viable, you're locked in and you can't move. And for people who are undecided, this is weird. So a lot of people show up and they're like, okay, I guess I'll go here. But apparently a lot of people didn't know about this new rule and found themselves unexpectedly locked in when they weren't.
Sweet.
Do you know what I mean?
Like, I do.
They were like, wait a minute. We don't get to do that thing that we used to do.
Right, I was going to switch over maybe because I wanted to see it, yeah.
So that's interesting. I don't know what percentage of that is. I've just seen people talking about it. Don't kill me if... Don't kill me, guys. I'm telling you what
good
I
advice.
Know.
Yep.
So anyway, we've blown past some of these pros and cons, and I think that we should talk about them of this whole process. And I'm going to start with the pros because there are way more cons. I mean, when you watch it, especially last night, when you're watching it, at least at the beginning, I was a little bit jealous. I think it seems cool and fun and you know, you're getting to interact with people. It's an exciting environment.
It feels like democracy in action.
That's what they keep telling
you. It feels like it. And that's what I want to stress that.
Yeah.
There is an excitement there. Like, oh, I'm going to convince you of this. And like, you give your impassioned speech, but actually I'm going to change your mind. And that's what we view as like, that's democracy.
And there's something inspiring about seeing people working together, talking, compromising on all of that stuff. And I've interacted with a bunch of people that have been delegates there in the past. And say it's a really awesome experience.
Well, it also culminates in the results coming out that night. So if you did do that, and if you did work hard, and you like hit the ground, and you won, there's a celebratory like communal sort of aspect of it.
But
I think a lot of people who worked hard were robbed of because of
absolutely
this absolute
that must have been
disaster.
So frustrating. And the reality,
it is. I do suspect we talked about going there ourselves and being at the Iowa caucuses. And I kind of suspect that if we'd been there, we would have and recorded the episode last night, we might have had a more positive opinion of the caucuses. Which I think this is one of those cases where actually being there might have warped our perception more.
Yeah.
Just because I'm sure it is emotionally positive to be involved with the parts
until
of this.
Until you're at 1 a.m. and you don't have any information.
Yeah.
And Pete's like, I did it.
Yeah, we're going to get to that.
I know.
Anyway, back to the caucus. The reality of it is that it is inherently flawed. I can see how this would have worked hundreds of years ago, you know? But it doesn't make sense now.
In
the Mercury days.
Right, like now we've got like apps and stuff that we can use.
Okay. We were seeing people last night literally flipping coins to figure out which delegate's going to get X amount of, you know, which candidate's going to get these delegates. And that's unacceptable. Also, diehard supporters were showing up without a second choice. And I'm sure that this has happened before in the past, but it really happened last night. And they simply left when their candidate wasn't viable. And that kind of undermines the whole process. Also, it's not anonymous. You're sitting there voting with your community. Your boss is over there. And how does that not affect people into feeling pressured to
Although,
make a decision?
I mean, there's an element of that that's positive, though, that since because it's not anonymous, you can go back and objectively know, like, there's no chance of actually getting the actual vote count wrong once they're all counted.
Sure.
Because you can check on and see how everyone voted. So I get that for this kind of an election. I get it. There's cons to it. I get the pros, though.
And
totally. I mean, I do, too. I'm just putting it out there that these are all the different issues that make it a bit very complicated.
There's also some joy I found with that element of, like, because you're there. It's these people. Like, there's a physicality to it. They're in the world. And you can look at, like, oh, here's Biden's one supporter against the wall. And then you pan over and, like, Elizabeth Warren or Bernie have, like, you know, the entire room is filled with them. And that's, there's just fun that comes from
and
that. But
pro or con, depending on who it is that's looking at them, Bernie does very well in a situation like this. He turns up with a loud,
very diverse crowd for him.
You know, really excited, enthusiastic, and that's contagious. And this is a good environment.
Every
Muslim
Bernie. Caucus and Latino caucus.
I saw that. Yep. Yeah, it's really cool. I loved to see how many people. There was a lot of like Bernie number one, Warren number two, and vice versa. Love that. But perhaps the most important complaint against the whole caucus system is that it is inherently exclusionary to people who can't take the time to mill around a gymnasium for hours or, you know, or people who are disabled, people who are poor and can't take time off work or have children, you know, and other responsibilities. Although Warren did offer
childcare. Also, I think they changed the time slightly, like they extended them so that people there are people who like have jobs that work all the time. They can't make it. And I think they extended the hours a little bit. So some
people
can make it.
But then they have to
it.
Go home and eat dinner and go to work the next morning. Yeah. It doesn't, if you're going to do that on a Monday, come on. It's a big problem. And so we're going into this election cycle wanting to increase our voter turnout. Well, this isn't the way to do it. You're totally excluding a whole swath of the population. And there was also talked about increasing voter turnout. Also, there's all this talk last night of how we were hoping to see numbers rise, more people showing up. Turns out that they matched those of 2016, which is good in a way. At least there wasn't a drop. But we needed this blue wave. Where's that blue wave that we think that we're going to be relying on to beat Donald Trump? You know, Bernie has just about the same amount of people showing up for him as last time. It's a little bit demoralizing. Yeah. It's one of the many demoralizing things from last night.
And I think, all the stuff we've talked about so far go into why that happened and why that is. But also, what if we just had all the states go on the same day and it was ranked choice voting and you go and you tick a box.
Right.
And that's how we vote.
I'm all for this, for ranked choice voting. I just...
But like the same day too, like this idea of like dragging it out is actually, it's not baffling. I know why it's there. I think it's stupid.
Yeah. All right. We need to take a real quick break and we're going to come back. We're going to talk about what the fuck happened last night. Can I swear that close to an ad?
Fuck yeah, you can.
Oh yeah.
Fuck yeah, you can. It's a fucking ad break.
Let's fucking do it.
And they're
fuckers.
They're all fucking products. None of them are just products.
Oh, they're fucking products?
Sure, they're fucking products.
Oh yeah. These products fuck.
It's the real shit.
It's a fucking ad break.
Welcome to the worst year ever. We'll get through it together or not. Everything is so dumb, 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 dumb.
And we're back. We're going to talk about whatever the fuck happened last night. But first, an update. The New York Times is now reporting that both Bernie and Pete have 10 delegates each. Different than when we started this. What a roller coaster.
10 delegates pledged each and 4 for Warren and the rest are undecided.
10 for Pete and 10 for Bernie. That sounds like Pete won. It's a victory for Pete.
It sounds like it is an outstanding victory.
His name has a yellow highlight and is at the top. I don't understand. Uh-huh.
By the way, one of the important stories is the online, social media games of each of these campaigns and how good they are and how comprehensive they are. And I want to note that Pete Buttigieg's celebratory "I won the Iowa caucus" post, in which he says, "Thank you, Iowa. The work we've done, the movement we've built, will begin to turn the page and change the trajectory of our country. I believe you will make me the next president of the United States, and I will do everything I can to make you proud." That tweet has 5,500 likes and 111,000 views,
ratio,
which is about a third of the views I got from one of the random videos on my Twitter thread from Richmond.
Views.
Yeah.
I see.
Yeah, I should also note that his campaign has 1.6 million followers on Twitter, which, let's see how that compares to Bernie. I know that Bernie has 10.4 million. So for some reference, Pete Buttigieg's Twitter is followed by roughly a quarter of the number of people as Jeremy Renner, who only posts on Twitter to brag about the fact that he used to be friends with the other people on the Avengers.
Do you have any other comments about Jeremy Renner?
I have a lot, but I will not.
We'll save them.
Okay.
Let's talk about, like I said, let's talk about what happened last night. Sure. It was the app, you guys. The app they've had however long, a long time to perfect, and you think they would have perfected it.
Well, you'd think. Right off the bat, just like off the top of my head, don't use an app.
Don't use an app.
That one of the software developers I follow yesterday said something along the lines of, "Speaking as a software developer, please do not use software for anything." Which would be a good lesson for elections.
And you don't have to work in software to come to that conclusion either.
You do not.
It's just the whole thing is truly perplexing because they also didn't have a good phone system in place or have people trained on how to use it. I guess They weren't able to either troubleshoot or report the problems because they couldn't get through. There was that remarkable video from CNN of this guy that was on hold, that had been on hold for an hour trying to report their numbers. And they came back they took his call while he was on air, and by the time he went to answer them, they hung up on him. It was span of 10 seconds.
Yeah, and there were like people like they have to like taking photos of the results and then texting them to people who were like driving to other precincts, and it was just a whole mess.
It's a mess. It's just wild because we've been doing this a long time and we didn't have the app before.
Mm-mm.
What did you do before? You know,
the app had just gotten developed in, you know, phones. Katie, when did we invent phones? Was it last month that phones were invented?
I guess phones are pretty recent too.
It's a 2020 thing. They were like, we want to make your year bad.
Weren't there also reports of people that like were on hold for like multiple hours?
Oh yeah.
And didn't some guy say he wasn't able to get his results in until 3 a.m.?
That's cool. That's the efficiency that we want from the first one.
And like we said up top, it's difficult. No matter what the results, it's hard to trust after this debacle. I don't want to be a conspiracy theorist, but it's hard to not with some of this stuff that's circling. So I want Cody and Robert to talk a little bit about what's going on with the development of this app. Who are the people behind this app? Because,
the worst case scenario is gross incompetence that points to, like, the rot.
That's the most likely scenario.
It's the worst case. It's also the most likely. I think that we need to make that clear.
Yeah, it's just emblematic of, like, a larger problem.
The longer I study Peter Paul Montgomery Buttigieg, the more convinced I am that there is nothing CIA shady about him. But that there is a lot of good old-fashioned Democratic Party corruption behind him and his campaign, and a lot of good old-fashioned, even more than that, a lot of good old-fashioned Democratic Party incompetence. And I'd like to give a specific example from before the caucus. In our episode, is Pete Buttigieg a CIA agent? Which we came down with the answer being no.
Let's make that clear.
We discussed the fact that he had hired a mercenary army that normally deployed troops to places like Iraq and Afghanistan to protect his campaign, even after they said they had stopped doing that sort of work, which we thought was shady and weird, and is in fact shady and weird. And I will give credit to a reporter from the Daily Beast who did the deep digging to reveal that this was not the
Scott
case.
Scott Bixby.
Scott Bixby, this was not the case. He hired a different company with the same name, and that might make it seem like I just like saw that they were the same name. I did not. I checked out the FEC filing, and the reason I said the wrong thing is because the Pete Buttigieg campaign reported that they had hired the company that is the mercenary army with that name, as opposed to the company that is a normal security firm. And going so far as listing the location and the address of that company's, like that mercenary army's Virginia address, as opposed to the New York-based company that they actually hired. And it's that sort of shit. It's incompetence. It's hiring an intern who I'm sure didn't actually, like, just Googled the first company with that name and didn't check to realize it wasn't the one that his campaign had hired. Like the first Patriot group that came up. Like, that sort of incompetence is what is continuously generating conspiracies. And it's the same kind of incompetence as when you, for example, hire people for your campaign who also work for this company that is providing a poorly coded app for the Iowa Democratic Party that will break on the night of the election.
Yeah, so let's unpack
that.
And then
lead to you declaring victory before there are results.
I think that most people don't understand what that means, so let's explain that. What company are we talking about?
We're talking about two companies, actually, but really one. The company that we're really talking about is Acronym. The company that is getting the blame is called Shadow, and Shadow is a subsidiary of Acronym. Acronym is a group that was formed in order to basically help fix the DNC's social media and like digital strategy and stuff. They provide a lot of different... So the whole goal of the company is to like improve the way the Democratic Party works in the digital age. Shadow is a subsidiary software company that made software that was supposed to help with like organizing phone banks and stuff like that,
yeah,
as well as providing
stuff.
This app. Yeah, as well as providing this app for the Iowa caucuses that like tabulated votes and shit. Now, right now, because Shadow's app broke and they are currently the nation's whipping boy. Acronym is making it very clear that Shadow is just invested, that acronym just invested in Shadow, mm-hmm. and trying to make it look like this is just a company we invested some money in and they fucked up and it's not our bad. Kate Nibbs, a reporter on Twitter, pointed out that acronym's about page today says we invested in Shadow, but if you look at the Wayback Machine from last month, they say we launched Shadow.
That's so funny.
And there's a bunch of shit like that.
The acronym, I mean, the before... CEO of acronym yeah. has tons of tweets about launching right. the company.
Yes, launching the company and specifically launching this app. Acronym did this. There's evidence that like
they share the
Shadow
workspace,
employees,
right?
Like they share yeah. they share offices in multiple states. Shadow employees went to like Acronym company retreats and stuff. Shadow is a part of Acronym. Acronym is the company at blame. Like Shadow also, I guess, but like they're just a chunk of this company.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Would and you say they're just acronyms, Shadow?
Oh.
Yes.
Sorry. Good job.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Last night, I want to touch on this real quick. There was some stuff going around about how, like, okay, so the DNC, the Iowa Democratic Party, donated X amount of dollars
too,
in the Nevada to the app. And at first, it was just being reported that Pete Buttigieg also contributed to that campaign.
About $42,000.
About a lot of money.
Yeah.
And I think all of us, I think this is just a really good example of taking a beat while you wait to have all the information. Because at the time, that felt very alarming. Why?
Still not great.
Yeah. Still not great. But why did Pete donate so much money? Why is he talking like he's won when we don't have any information? But then after sitting with it for a little bit, we started to realize that other campaigns also donated to the funding of this app. That is the fair, true statement. We just talked about this in our little text thread about like, that's actually a really good example in 2020 of, yeah, it still doesn't look good, but we need to be able to take a beat in these situations and see the information coming in. We don't really have a full picture of what happened. I mean, we've got a picture, we've got their explanation, but we're going to be getting more information.
Right. And like, I've seen a lot of tweets that say like Pete funded the app. And that's not accurate.
I mean, it's accurate in the same way that like I've funded Walmart because I've purchased products
right.
from them.
Right. Like his campaign did give a bunch of money to the firm that made the app.
Yes.
Biden gave once.
Klobuchar,
actually,
right?
Gillibrand's campaign gave
right.
six.
Christine Gillibrand,
six
yeah.
more six payments.
Yeah.
Leading up to December, very recent. But for varying reasons, different reasons for each campaign. But this like he funded the app, he made the app is sort of catching on, and that's not accurate.
Right.
No, and it's frustrating because when you try to engage with people on this online and bust this myth, it comes across as if you're defending Pete Buttigieg, which has never been my goal. And it's eternally frustrating to me.
Well, it's still extremely shady stuff, and like
it's very
I mean, even
shady.
Like the his campaign. There are people that work on his campaign in high level positions who
and
are
work in shadow too.
Work in shadow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tell us more about that.
I mean, one of his senior advisors is married to the CEO of Acronym.
Okay.
Interesting. Who is a huge Pete fan, by the way. She
Big Pete Stanajuge.
Yeah, she's a Pete Stanajuge. A lot of tweets about how great it is that Pete's running when he did his exploratory committee. Mm-hmm. Incidentally, the same month that Shadow was launched. Whatever. But they're just like a lot of people who have worked or are working on both things.
Right.
There's like a fine line. We're trying to steer clear of conspiracy stuff, but also like, I don't know, basic conflict of interest, basic incompetence, basic like, well, maybe you shouldn't be doing that.
There's a similarity between kind of the conspiracies that I'm seeing floated around what happened yesterday in Iowa and the conspiracies I'm seeing floated around the base, that neo-Nazi terrorist group. And the similarity is that like it's come out from some great reporting by Jason Wilson that the guy who founded this group is an American who lives in Russia, which has of course gotten a bunch of people talking to like Russia's funding, like the neo-Nazi movement in the United States. Mm-hmm. They're behind all of these different fascist groups. And everyone that I know who is an expert, both on sort of like Ukrainian and Russian fascist movements and American fascist movements, says, no, That's not the case. What's happening is that all of these groups have affinity for each other and shared interests, and there's a lot of interchange between them. And it makes sense that a guy who was into this stuff would also be into a lot, like would move to Russia. There's a lot of reasons for that. There's a lot of reasons these groups, like most of these guys, these members of Adam Waffen and the base, expressed an interest in Azov Battalion, this Ukrainian fascist group ahead of time. And it's like, it's shady and it's a problem and it's important, but not for the reason people are stating. And the fact that Shadow has a bunch of former Hillary people, the fact that Shadow and Acronym have a bunch of people who are sympathetic and closely related to people who are in the Buttigieg campaign is shady and a problem, but not because Pete Buttigieg is engaging in some illegal conspiracy, but because they all are the same kinds of people who believe the same kinds of things and happen to be the same kinds of folks who wind up steering the Democratic Party. And like that's the problem. It's not... they're not breaking the law. They're not orchestrating anything. They're not smart enough to orchestrate anything, as this shit show shows. That's what I see as what's actually happening here.
Yeah.
Right. It's common interests. A lot of conspiracies of like, oh, they're doing this, like these backroom deals. You don't need like backroom deals. It's like, no, if you do this, I make money and you make money.
Right. We tend to sensationalize something that doesn't need to be sensationalized. It's bad as it is. Like, there's a reason to have to take umbrage with it regardless.
Yeah, it's like not great to look at, okay, the COO, the CTO, the CEO of Shadow, all of them were like high-level figures in the Hillary campaign. Okay, but that doesn't equal this scenario that people were putting forth. It just equals like, well, yeah, that's like the rot.
Yeah.
And I do think like one of the important things to point out is that like, because I keep seeing that focused on in discussions online, is that all these people worked for Hillary before. And like, yes, this is part of a problem, but it's also a lot of them worked for Obama before.
Right.
Like a
huge number back. It's just DNC
people. They're old DNC hacks. Like that's that. And that is the problem. But it's less that they're orchestrating a conspiracy and more that the kind of people who wind up at high positions in the DNC and the sort of companies that are funded entirely by DNC donors are all going to believe and want some of the same things because they're the same basic people.
Yeah, there's all this like meritocracy, like technocrat nonsense that leads to things like this. It's like, okay, well, your worldview is wrong and that's what has got us here.
And all of this is to say to me, bringing it back around to this caucus, so it doesn't look good. Okay, Biden.
It does not.
Biden didn't do well. He's obviously an establishment
strong
favorite.
Fourth. A strong fourth.
That was a very funny tweet of yours. And you know,
a
Buttigieg,
strong almost the last finger on my hand.
Unbelievable. Buttigieg is another. Obviously, we're looking at here all this information here. Establishment person, and you know, so and all of his connections to this app that went haywire. Bernie is very clearly leading the popular vote here, and it's bizarre. This is what I mean. This is like the worst, most toxic way for us to have started this election.
Yeah.
You know who very vocally believes that the popular vote matters the most, and that most people who vote is what should elect the person?
Who?
Pete Buttigieg,
according to his essays?
According to a lot of quotes that he has said in the past few months on camera,
it's
out loud.
Wild. And
I think there's too much focus on like what might be happening behind closed doors and what we know, which is that because so many Buttigieg people thought Acronym was a good idea, thought it was worth putting money into, thought their products were worth putting money into, they made the same mistake everyone else in the DNC made, and it proved to be a bad choice because of everything that happened in Iowa, because it was a clusterfuck and this company's bad at what they do. Whereas the Sanders campaign made a very pointed decision not to invest in that, not to buy services from that company, because they were like, no, this looks like garbage. And it is garbage, which we'll talk about more. But like, this is like, I think the problem that we miss when we get into conspiracy stuff is like, I don't think the problem is a conspiracy. I think the problem is incompetence, and it is not everyone in this campaign, in this race, who is incompetent.
Yeah.
It's specific people.
Yeah. on that point, I'm just going to real quick say the group's top donor for this acronym, Seth Klarman. He's a billionaire. He's a former GOP mega donor.
Ooh.
He's a CEO of Baupost Group. It's a Boston-based hedge fund. Okay. Invests heavily in liquid natural gas companies. He gave them $1.5 million about a month ago.
Sounds like a real winner.
Now, natural gas, that means it makes trees?
Natural is good. Natural means good.
Yeah.
It means farts, right? Uh-huh. Natural gas
natural
farts.
Natural means farts, exactly.
Beautiful.
He runs a fart company. So, get that fart money.
Also, I have to note, there's an amazing article. The Outline, people ask all the time, who should you be reading for news? The Outline's fucking killing it this year, and they came out with, within hours of this clusterfuck, an incredible article based on insider interviews about Acronym, the company behind the talk. And one of the
behind
things...
Behind Shadow!
Relates, yeah, behind Shadow. The co-founders of Acronym are a guy with the last name of McGowan and Michael Dubin. And Michael Dubin is the founder of the Dollar Shave Club.
Okay. Cancel your subscriptions, guys. Unless they're a sponsor for us, then keep it.
Okay, yeah, so the other person is Tara McGowan then. And she's,
yeah, Tara McGowan.
And
sorry.
She's the wife of one of Pete's top advisors.
Unbelievable.
Yes, yes, she is, yeah.
All right, guys, we're going to take another quick break, and then we're going to come back to talk more about this stuff, because apparently you guys have more information to share with us, and we're very interested.
Shadow. Oh my god, there's so much more to say.
Great. Welcome to the worst year ever. We'll get through it together, or not. Everything is so dumb, 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 dumb.
Okay, we are back from that ad break to talk more about
we are
shadowy figures and acronyms yep. of shadowy figures.
We sure are.
Yeah. So we'll get to Robert. You've got way more to say about Acronym. I've probably got some things to pop in there.
So much to say about Acronym.
Real quick, we wanted to comment on the name Shadow, because my God, what are you doing? It is unbelievable. Who wrote this movie that we're all living in?
We want to put out, what's the most evil-sounding company name?
It's
you know?
Wild that they Shadow. Did this. And I'm just going to read really quick on their website, their about page. Why Shadow? When a light is shining, shadows are a constant companion. We see ourselves as building a long-term, side-by-side shadow of tech infrastructure to the Democratic Christ. Party and the progressive community at large. So, like, they kind of know. They're like,
well, hey, Mitch, what was one of was there some sort of problem in 2016 with people viewing the Democratic Party's chief candidate as like shady? Did people call her shady a lot? Was that like a big issue we had? Oh, yeah, it sure was, Mitch. What should we name the company that runs our online efforts? I'm thinking Shadow.
The Corruptor, the app.
Corrupticon.
The Corrupticon. Download
Hitler.net? No, no.
But also, make sure you download it now because there are only you only get 200 downloads for the app. The way they rolled out the app is very, very embarrassing. That's what I'm alluding
to. Oh, good.
It's fine.
I want to hear more about Acronym, Robert.
So, Acronym is a dumb company that should never have been formed.
I know the story.
This is the key of it. It was launched ahead of the 2018 midterms. It was described as a digital-first startup. And, like, the goal of Acronym was to, quote, the goal of the Acronym was, like, to raise a shitload of money, $75 million initially, and deploy that money on anti-Trump advertising in five key battleground states in the 2020 election. Those states being North Carolina, Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, and Arizona. This effort, this strategy, do you want to know what its name is called?
Please.
Kind of.
Four is enough. The logic is that these four states are the only ones you need to win to win the election.
Oh,
you gotta love not making the exact same motherfucking mistake.
Plenty bold.
Also, I'm sorry, but they don't have an acronym for that.
Bold
FIE. FI. They call it FI.
That's a terrible
FI on you, FI on us, FI on the Democratic Party.
FI on the planet. We're out.
FI on me.
Four is enough.
Unbelievable.
We are not elitist to discard tens of millions of Americans.
It's like,
we
why?
Think
it's
four
like,
is enough.
Like, you're like, you start a campaign and your slogan is just like, come on.
Come on.
It's kind of like
give
saying,
us another ring.
Pete Buttigieg, plenty bold.
Yeah, it's plenty bold.
Okay.
Yeah.
Please continue, Robert.
So in November of 2019, it was revealed that acronym and PACRONYM, its Political Action Committee, which actually pretty great name if you're a company named
If you're going to do that, sure.
I would have made the same call had I launched a company named Acronym. Yeah. Had raised 40% of that plan, $75 million. Now, so this
that's
is
where the
strategy.
Fart money like, went to PACRONYM.
That's where the fart money went. They want to compete with the Trump campaign's massive social media campaign. It's massive, like digital ground game, which the Trump campaign has spent more than anyone has on Facebook ads, and it's not even fucking close. They've spent more than anyone on digital ads. It's not even fucking close. So on its surface, there's some reasoning that like, oh yeah, the Democrats need a fucking counter to that. There should be an organized group for the Democratic Party working on this. However, all of the evidence from inside Acronym suggests they were terrible at it. The outline got quotes from Acronym employees, one of whom noted, they call it a startup environment as the explanation for why no one knows what's happening.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And I found some evidence, some examples of the incredible ads that Acronym has been running on Facebook. ad number one. Who will the Democrats choose to take on the Night King? You decide.
Oh,
sign up to play the hashtag game of elections, hashtag for the throne. And then the two pictures are Elizabeth Warren photoshopped on a Game of Thrones on the Iron Throne and Pete Buttigieg photoshopped on the Iron Throne.
Yep.
Timely! Really hitting into that. And again, yeah, hitting into that fucking show everybody loves. I mean, it was April of 2019, so it was fresher then, but still.
No.
Dumb.
Oh, my God.
Dumb.
That's infuriating.
Yeah. Another example of Acronym ads from March of 2019. The Democrats running for president are trying to distinguish themselves in televised town halls, policy proposals, and even graphic tees, emoji of a pink t-shirt. In this week's hashtag FWIW, we took a dive into the world of presidential merch stores and the strategy behind them. So for what it's worth is like their average ad. And their name of this March one was the Ides of March, which is good.
What the
so
what?
It's like,
what?
Yeah. They also launched a news app. Let me find the fucking yeah. It's just like
real quick, just nothing, interesting about the merch store stuff. Pete Buttigieg launched his store before he launched his website with a platform.
He sure did.
I wonder what if that's telling about Mr. Pete.
One of the key projects launched by Acronym was called Courier Newsroom, a center-left content network designed to mimic the aesthetics of local news sites, which McGowan cheerfully spun as a replacement for actual local news.
Have
you guys seen a lot of Courier Newsroom links shared? No?
I don't think so. I can't speak
to
that.
Maybe that's because
it
was a massive failure of an idea.
What a bad idea. It's like, what if we destroy the credibility of local news even more? A thing we don't need. A thing that's bad. Like,
is that how we fight Trump?
Unbelievable.
Yes.
That's how they make
now,
some money.
In sort of response to like the ideas that this is kind of some like sinister CIA conspiracy, one of the people I want to quote here is Karnik Ganapathy, who is the co-founder of the Democratic messaging firm MVMT Communications. And Ganapathy's partner is a senior advisor to Bernie Sanders, although Ganapathy's not a part of the campaign, but that's kind of like the angle he's coming at this. He's kind of from the left side of the Democratic Party. His associates are. So he's on the more on the Sanders side of things. And his sort of summary of the whole situation with outline and shadow is there's such a pervasive culture of self-dealing when it comes to consultants and party committees and stuff. And we have a situation where as a party, if we are the good guys, we have to be the good guys, not engaging in this. There's a reason why so many Americans think politics is an elitist plot to make a handful of people wealthier. And it's kind of true. And
I think that's
the issue. That's what's happening here.
Yeah. The idea of like this, like, for profit, like this private company making this app and getting all this money to do this for a public service, like that's what people don't like.
Bullshit.
It's disgusting.
Yeah, it's gross.
Shadow.
It's dumb. It was a bad. It was never anything but a terrible idea. Here's a quote. There's also a really good Intercept article on fucking Acronym and Shadow. I'm going to read one quote from it. A person with knowledge of the company's culture who asked to remain anonymous for fear of reprisal shared communication showing that top officials at the company regularly expressed hostility to Sanders supporters.
Yeah, of course they did.
Married to Michael Hall, a senior strategist for the Buttigieg campaign. There's no evidence that any preference of candidates had any effect on the coding issue that is stalling the Iowa results.
I mean, good.
But again, everything, like emails from this company are going to leak out at some point.
Oh,
I already
yeah.
know it. There's if Russia, again, I don't think they orchestrated this, but they're not dumb. Like if they could hack something, one thing to hack would be the fucking emails of this company, because you're going to get them talking shit about Sanders supporters. You can roll that out at the DNC, just like happened with the DNC leaks. It's, like it's of course.
A scary prediction, but
that's what you're going to do.
I mean, that's what you do.
It's all very upsetting. So what are your takeaways here, guys? I'm excited that Biden didn't do well. That's something that we can all resoundingly say for sure.
Yeah.
That happened tonight is that Biden didn't do well.
A week fourth. I think that's
didn't
good.
Do
we can
well
all unite in that.
Yeah.
I think the Bernie winning the popular vote. For sure.
It's not
mean,
bad.
And maybe other stuff,
and
too.
I mean, he probably won. A lot of the districts that haven't been reported.
Here's what I posit. Even if this all comes out, Pete won, Bernie takes the popular vote, that's going to give Bernie a real boost in the other states. People are going to be mobilized and want to – maybe that will draw more people out. I don't know.
Maybe, yeah. I think the whole way it's shaking out is, like we've been talking about, a disaster, and it doesn't make anybody really look good.
No.
Except for, like, people who handle it well. Like, Elizabeth Warren wasn't like, I won, or, like, anything like that. She gave a nice speech, and then she
I just want to say something real quick about her speech. She did give a nice speech that I eventually saw when I was watching live. The Biden and her came out to have a speech at the same time, and she was on screen, and they immediately cut away to him.
To fourth
and then,
place?
The person who at that point, I mean, everyone's like, he's not viable. It didn't seem – and he was basically saying
that point,
like –
he was, yeah, doing terribly.
He was basically saying, see ya, suckers. I'm going to New Hampshire. And then MSNBC, once it was done, they just went back to people talking and didn't even cut back to Warren. CNN did briefly. Then cut away in the middle of her speech. Mm-hmm. I happened to catch it hours later, and they still had the live Chyron underneath. But her speech was good, and it was cute.
But yeah, like I think, yeah, like that's generally good. I think Bernie does probably benefit from it, just because everything around it is like, well, that's not good. You fucked up. Pete declared victory when he didn't win. Like I think all these things ultimately will. It's just a disruption of what it was supposed to be. And leading up to the caucus was very much like trying to downplay it. Everything surrounding it is not good.
Yeah.
No.
And another positive takeaway is that I think this could be the nail in the coffin of the Iowa caucus.
Right.
The
whole process that we're doing. Yeah.
I mean, democracy, after this next election, we will all be
buried alive anyway.
Fighting in the street against Donald Trump's manic legions, and there will be no more democracy.
Oh,
so,
snuggling together in that coffin, right?
You're being silly, but it could happen here.
It could happen here, yeah. You know, the biggest heartbreak from all this, like the DNC, I took some leafs out of the DNC's book, and I hired about 40 different people, former Obama and Hillary staffers, to write my jokes for me this year, and I paid them $7.3 million. Now, a lot of that was Bloomberg money, obviously.
Sure.
But, you know, they gave me a really killer line to throw out here that, because we don't have the exact numbers, I can't, but I was going to call him Pete number two to judge.
I know. Do we know who
it's a heartbreaker.
Second in the popular vote?
I think it's Pete.
Pete number two to judge.
Pete number two to judge.
So with the popular vote, Bernie's winning 28,220, and Pete is close behind with 27,030.
Okay. I mean, I guess I said close. I assume that's close. It seems fairly close. I don't know.
62% reporting in, despite MSNBC and CNN both having graphics that say it's 94% in.
Doesn't that just bum you out when you're like, oh, we're talking about like, what? How many people are we talking about? 200,000 people?
We are talking about a Culver City
of
voters, basically.
Culver City being an area of Los Angeles.
Culver City being a very small area of Los Angeles with reasonably priced rent for being on the west side.
Absolutely, if you want to be
good
close
neighborhood
to the ocean.
Yeah.
So there are some potential positives we can look at in the long run. Here I am just trying to spin it that way. But mostly it is the shit show that we have described.
It's a fun little disaster for everybody.
You know what? Actually, here's a good way to look at the number of people who voted in the Iowa caucuses.
Okay.
If you count sidearms as well as primary arms, a slightly more people voted in Iowa than there were firearms in Richmond during the gun rally.
Okay.
Well, then that's something
that's
right there.
Democracy, I think.
There
right?
we go. That's there we go.
Some important some important data to unpack.
I feel like a few coin flips might change those numbers a little bit, but you know.
Will the results come in the middle of the State of the Union?
I'm sure they will. They want to prolong and obfuscate the results of this as much as possible because the results help who wins, and I'm pretty sure they know who won. So.
Okay.
It's getting depressing.
I think that that's where we wrap things up.
I think that's where we wrap things up.
Congratulations to Mayor Pete, who is now framing this as the pundits didn't believe we could do it, but we did it. Pete, every pundit loves you. What are you talking about?
It's also just really weird to claim that you won something when 0%.
Oh, sure. That's also true.
That will always be something that bothers me, is the way he was tweeting after... Zero
very very Trumpian of him.
If that's
quite
not
Trumpian,
like male
Pete.
Privilege. I don't know what
I mean.
Hey, I won. How?
It's just
0%.
But
the numbers
real?
Can't lie if there are no numbers.
I mean,
so.
Sure, all of that. But for real, who? How was he getting that information that other people didn't have? You know,
Shadow.
So I will say, you know, I don't know if you guys were aware of this, but campaigner Katie Coates won an 11-year battle to get the Global Association of International Sports Federation, GASIF, to confirm pole dancing as a professional sport,
which means
that it is now possible that pole dancing could be an Olympic sport. Mm. And I'm taking a leaf out of Mayor Pete's book and congratulating myself for winning the gold medal in pole dancing.
So proud of you.
I'm so proud of you, Robert.
I know. Thank you.
Victorious?
He won.
I am. I won.
Yeah.
I won.
At the Olympics.
And now on to
the
Super
Olympics.
That haven't happened yet, but you did it.
100%. 100% of judges have not yet reported in, but based on the early numbers, I am tracking a victory.
The energy, the vibe says that you won.
The vibe,
I'm proud of you, and I'm grateful that we ended this podcast on such a positive note.
On a victory.
I think this win might be enough to get me to finally learn how to pole dance.
Mm-hmm. I'm rooting for you,
Robert. Best year ever.
You guys can check us out online. We have social media. It's true. At Worst Year Pod on Twitter and Instagram. And then, you know, we also tweet and stuff like that.
That's
you can
true.
Follow us as well if you want.
We do tweet.
I'm Katie Stoll.
I'm Cody Johnston.
On Twitter.
And I'm gonna learn how to pole dance.
That's his new handle, guys. Follow it.
Oh, we're doing our handles, not our names.
Oh, yeah.
I'm Cody Johnston.
Google my name and the word Twitter.
Yeah. I don't know why I decided. We never do that. I just, you know, sometimes I feel under the pressure to wrap when I'm wrapping it up. And
it
I'm
all.
Like,
gotta get all that out there.
Hero
do
words.
Mm-hmm. No, Katie, this is a gut field, and we're going to follow your gut wherever it leads us.
Follow your gut to my Twitter page and hit that
there we go.
Subscribe.
There we go.
And then on to New Hampshire.
This has been fun.
I just want to point out that I already won New Hampshire. I know I'm not running, but I just won New Hampshire.
God. Man, this is a room full of winners, liars and winners.
You're getting confirmation that we're all winners.
I mean, there's 0% in and nobody's voted yet, but definitely won.
Yeah. Katie, or sorry, Sophie, less than 100%. That's the
way
you
frame
that. Oh
my God, thank you so much. Thank you so much. Yeah. Early rounds, I am a winner. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
All right.
We'll see you guys. This is the worst year ever. We still have the State of the Union, the impeachment vote, and a Democratic debate this week. I hate everyone.
You mean the worst week of the
we're
worst year ever.
Take on the Night King.
We're going to take on the Night King. I'm just kidding. I love everyone in this
Jesus
room and Robert.
Christ.
And Daniel.
Voldemort to the polls.
Are we just going to riff around until people stop listening?
I think so, yeah. until the song sort of like slowly ramps up.
Daniel, play cue the music.
Key race alert. My dog just won an award. For what? We don't know.
Daniel, we'll play the music.
Out.
Play
ramp
the music.
It up to drown us out.
I tried.
Yes. Daniel? Love it. Worst Year Ever is a production of iHeartRadio.
For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.